And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee. At Starbucks with a double latte, skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville, now part of the Athletic Baseball Show, where you'll find great baseball talk all week long and all season long. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic, and I am joined yet again this week by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, distinguished former major leaguer, and the voice of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN Radio, Doug Glanville. Doug has just climbed off a red eye from San Diego. We did an incredible Dodgers-Padres game last night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, great game, but Doug's feeling fresh as always. Doug, are you ever going to call a game in the Eastern time zone? Just one?
Yeah, you know, showing a lot of love this year for the central and western part of the United States. I think that's balancing things out. So, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out another strategy, but you know how it is with the West Coast. Either you get back at 7 in the morning or you get back at like 9 p.m. And I'm like, I don't want a whole day just sitting around in a hotel sleeping. So I'm just trying to get home. San Diego is particularly tough because, you know, you have to connect through, you know, there's no nonstops. So, yeah, it's just what it is. So a lot of red eyes, probably not great that I probably fall asleep every day at 2 o'clock, no matter where I am. But it's all worth it. It's all worth it.
Here's the good news. You have never fallen asleep in the middle of this podcast yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Let's keep that record intact, okay?
Yeah.
Hey, Doug, we are so thrilled today to welcome in this week's special guest because she's one of the most beloved people that we know in the baseball universe. It is our dear friend, Sarah Langs of MLB.com. And Sarah, it is just so wonderful to have you join us again. How are you?
I'm doing great. And thank you guys so much for having me. It's always so much fun to talk with you, too.
Yeah, the pleasure is ours. So first off, everybody watching this thing on YouTube can see I'm wearing a very special T-shirt today. It is RotoWear's Baseball is the Best shirt, which is devoted to, yes, the one, the only, Sarah Langs, with proceeds going to Project ALS, which funds ALS research. Such an important cause, and especially important to Sarah because, as many of you know, Sarah announced last October she has been diagnosed with ALS. So, I mean, we'll talk about that as we go through the show. But first, Sarah, I want you to know, when I wear this T-shirt, I think of you and it makes me smile because you make people smile every day with your amazing spirit. So tell people about the shirt, how it came about, how people can get one, and how it made you feel when RotoWear approached you with this idea.
Oh my goodness. So first of all, thank you. And I've done a handful of podcasts now where I log on and the person is wearing it and I'm so overwhelmed every time. So that is what happened when you logged on here today, but they actually didn't approach me. they approached us. So I believe, I don't know whose initial idea it was, but I believe it was a combination of RotoWare and Rob Friedman, Pitching Ninja. And they approached Mandy Bell and said, hey, would Sarah like this? And they showed her the design. She was blown away. And she asked me one day out of the blue, hey, where would you want, like, where are you recommending people donate money for research? And I told her. And then one day she texts me and she just goes, get ready to cry. And I'm like, what is going on? And she knows me. She knows what my reaction would be. And then a little while later, I'm tagged in a tweet and I saw this. So it actually happened kind of behind the scenes, away from me, but I was just so blown away. And if anyone is interested in getting one, you go to the RotoWire website under baseball and you'll see them there. And every time I see someone in one, I'm just completely overwhelmed. I mean, I saw a handful of people at the World Baseball Classic. And I mean, people have been telling me they've seen them at ballparks and everything. And it's amazing.
Yeah, I saw them in spring training. I've seen them at ballparks. It's the coolest thing. And all right, so there's that. And now one more thing. Last week was Sarah's birthday. Birthdays are important. This birthday was particularly important because it inspired the Fist Bump for ALS campaign, to which I have proudly contributed. Sarah, why don't you tell everyone the story behind Fist Bump for ALS?
Absolutely. So I, as you said, birthdays are important. I've always loved my birthday. Doug knows that. It's been his phone for, what is that, 2-3 years now since we discussed that, maybe on this podcast. And I have always loved my birthday, and not just mine, but everyone's birthdays. I just think they're really worth celebrating. And so I've known for a while that I wanted to do something this year to raise money for ALS research and raise awareness for ALS. It isn't a rare disease. It's just an underfunded one. And I had known that I wanted to do something for a really long time. And one day, lying in bed at like 5 a.m., it came to me, I know what it should be. It should be fist bumps, because people with ALS, sometimes they high five is a little more difficult. Fist bumps are easy. And I wanted it to be something people could have fun with on social media, maybe a pet, a dog, a kiddo, you know, whoever it may be. And so that's where it came from. And I've been blown away by the support so far. And of course, part of the reason I want to use my birthday energy to share that is because Lou Gehrig's streak actually ended on May 2nd, on my birthday. And May is ALS Awareness Month. May 2nd, my birthday, is also exactly a month to Lou Gehrig Day, celebrated across MLB. So it just felt like it was staring at me to do something.
So many people in baseball and across the sports world have jumped on board this campaign, already raised thousands of dollars for ALS. So heartwarming to see.
Well, Sarah, you know, baseball is the best, and of course we all agree here. I guess I was wondering about the story of, first of all, when you first were inspired to say it. And I think part two of that question is, what about 2023 season have you had reason to reinforce that statement? Like, what are some of your best moments, so to speak?
So I've been asked that a few times, and I finally went back and found the answer. So when I was in college at UChicago, we did a series in my junior year, I believe, where each of our sports editors and writers wrote a story saying why their sport, the sport they loved most, was the best. So someone wrote about volleyball, someone wrote about football, so on and so forth. And of course, I wrote about baseball. And I went back and I found that the first time I ever tweeted baseball the best was when I shared that story, which was in May of 2014. And so that kind of planted this idea of, you know, stacking things up and putting baseball at the top, baseball being the best on whatever list it may be. And I think it was just kind of a phrase that I thought of with so many different moments. And when I started working at MLB and, tweeting more and just sharing more stats myself on social media, there became so many moments that aren't really stats related. I mean, there can be great stat moments that show why baseball is the best, but baseball is the best because the Padres now celebrate wins with piñatas after going to Mexico City. And baseball is the best because it feels like almost every team has a home run celebration this year. I mean, seeing the Pirates with their whole celebration, even on a double, you know, pretending to have the law sword and everything. So, I mean, for me, it's just those moments that show us the personality and the fact that these are people who are on the field as well, which, of course, you two know very well, but some fans don't really process. And I think sharing that phrase and seeing baseball in that way really helps humanize the players and the game overall.
As long as we're going back in time to when you were in college, let me go back even farther, because when you spoke at the New York Baseball Writers Dinner, you mentioned your sixth grade teacher as starting your whole incredible life story, roaring in this direction. How did that come about, that in sixth grade, your whole life changed?
Oh my goodness. Well, huge shout out to Mr. Bachrach, Josh Bachrach. I'm sure he will listen to this. He listens to every podcast and just a huge baseball fan. But for me in sixth grade, you know, I had my mother's sister passed away that year. And it was a really difficult year for me personally. I wasn't being bullied, it wasn't my peers, but it was just my own self. And working with that teacher, you know, Josh, Mr. Bachrach, and having baseball to rely on was really formative for me. It was a really important moment. Of course, I'd always loved baseball, but I always credit him with being the one who said to me, you know, read all these stories in the newspaper. You could do that, because I loved English. It was my favorite subject. I loved to read and to write, and I love baseball, and I love sports overall. But when you're in sixth grade, you don't necessarily put two and two together and realize that, hey, I could do that. And so I think that's really why I always credit him with that. And again, I mean, you both have children, and you're both very involved in baseball. Not every teacher is a big baseball fan. I mean, teachers have so much going on. So that was really the first adult who wasn't my parents and who wasn't maybe one of their absolute best friends who enjoyed baseball the way I did. So I think that's a really important part as well.
It's always amazing how those moments intersect with your path and change that path. It's the greatest, one of the greatest parts of life. At that dinner in New York, the Baseball Writers Dinner, you received an amazing honor. It was the Casey Stengel You Can Look It Up Award. And you sat on a dais with Aaron Judge, with Justin Verlander, with Julio Rodriguez, with so many baseball legends. But I honestly think it was your award, the speech you gave, our friend Buster Olney's speech presenting that award to you, that was the emotional highlight of that entire night. What did that night and that award and the outpouring of love from that group mean to you?
I mean, I think I'm still processing it, and we are, what, 5 months later at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it was incredible to be there, to be amongst those people, but I've always loved baseball, and I never have needed baseball to love me back. You know, that's not the goal of fandom. That's not even the goal of being a writer or an analyst. But in that moment, with all the people who came up to me and everyone listening to me as I read through a list of people on my phone that I had made of people I wanted to thank, I really realized, to a small extent, and again, I realize it more every day, that baseball and the people involved do seem to care about me, and it's just an incredible thing. And I don't mean to say that in a, I'm not pushing off that care. It's just so hard to process, because that's not the goal. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to share my love of the game with anyone who's out there who wants to hear about it, or even doesn't in many cases. So it was just incredibly emotional for me. And I mean, Buster always points out that I got 2 standing ovations and Aaron Judge got none.
That
doesn't
right.
make any sense whatsoever, but it was a really, really incredible moment. And I'm just so, so grateful.
Yeah, you know, Buster spoke that night about all the thank you notes that you write to many people. 7 years ago, I got one of those notes after the first time I ever met you in person at the ESPN preseason baseball summit in 2016. And I still have that email, I want you to know. He also mentioned how you wrote a thank you note to the doctor who diagnosed you as having ALS. That was Dr. Neil Snyder of Columbia University. I'm sure doctors like him get very few thank you notes. So why do you write thank you notes in general? And why did you particularly want to thank him?
Well, I wanted to thank him because the process of being diagnosed with ALS, and people may not know this, so this is a good awareness moment. It's a diagnosis of elimination. For many diseases, you can say, here's the blood test. Okay, you have X, Y, Z. For ALS, there are 2 known genes that can cause it, but that's only 10% of cases. So if you have those blood tests and you don't have those genetic markers, then you go down this path, which for me took multiple years of different tests, many tests, some painful tests, and a lot of uncertainty, and a lot of things thrown at you of it could be this, this, or this, but we have to check this, we have to check that. And so the moment of finding out that it was ALS was a sigh of relief in a way. And I know that might sound strange, but I had gone a pretty long time knowing something was wrong, but not knowing what was wrong. And there are not very many medications for ALS, but I was on nothing prior to that. So, okay, there's... At the time, there was basically 1 approved medication. I started it that day. And there were other things that I could do that would address the symptoms that I was having. So it was a real sense of relief. And especially as someone who is considered an atypical case. I mean, we talk about Lou Gehrig. Lou Gehrig isn't even a typical case because he was pretty young. Your typical ALS diagnosee is a white man around 50 years old. I'm not many of those things. And I saw a lot of doctors who, in retrospect, knowing what I know now, should have diagnosed me previously. So part of my gratefulness to him was that he had the guts to do it and that he had the background to do it. And the overall thank you notes, I mean, for me, it certainly goes back to childhood, but also to my entire journey throughout different jobs and internships. I never want to take anything for granted. And I think I really start sending those notes, especially in the professional sphere, when I became so grateful for these opportunities I was getting. And I wanted to make sure that I was communicating that I'm not, you know, some 22-year-old, 23-year-old who thinks this is the way the world is supposed to work. You're not supposed to be at Game 7 of the Cubs winning the World Series for the first time in 108 years. I mean, people are, but people like you, Jason, are supposed to be there. Not me, when I was basically a kid. So I think a lot of it was making it clear that I was aware of how lucky I was, even if I had worked hard for those moments, and also making it clear that I'm ready for whatever's next as well.
Well, Sarah, you know, we all share this incredible passion for the game, and, you know, I've always found baseball to be restorative and renewing, but I also feel like it's like an old friend that keeps coming back in a new form. And I wonder, since your diagnosis or since you expressed it to the world, what you found new in baseball that added another layer of magic to what the game means to you?
I mean, I think what's amazing about baseball and sharing that diagnosis is really that nothing has changed. I mean, certainly the outpouring of love, which is overwhelming and incredible, has changed. And I've talked at length about how grateful I am for that. But I hope we can start appreciating people before something is wrong. But the game itself is amazing. It's just as amazing as it was for me 10 years ago, 15 years ago, or 3 years ago. And that's really comforting. So I'm not sure that there's anything new about it. But that's what's incredible. So many things in my life have changed. There's so many things I need help with now and what have you. When I'm sitting right here where I am now talking to you guys, and I have my monitors behind me and I'm watching games and I'm on Baseball Reference and Fangraphs and everywhere, the exact same as it has been for so long. And that's really, really important to me. The baseball is there and it is such a constant.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about baseball, because you and Doug and I share something, right? We share an amazement over the way baseball always provides us with this never-ending supply of moments and numbers and records and history that you never see coming. And even when you do, it connects the dots between what you're watching tonight and what somebody watched 97 years ago. When did you latch on to that side of the sport? That's the thing that really bonded Doug and I the first time we ever met. And I think we can say the same about you.
I think it really goes back to my parents. I mean, I've talked a lot about how growing up at the dinner table, we would talk about something that just happened, maybe with the Mets or the Giants, my mom's team. We'd wonder, hey, I wonder when the last time that happened. And now I can answer those questions. But I also think hearing my parents' stories, I mean, I've heard my mom talk about Willie Mays' 4 homer games so many times. My dad talking about Roberto Clemente. Yesterday, we were texting about Vida Blue after the news of his passing. And the fact that they consume these players and their careers and the way that I am now with other players, and that we're able to share that, but to know that that was kind of a shared experience, that they were in awe of Willie Mays the way I was, Mike Piazza when I was growing up, or Albert Pujols when he came on the scene, or any player. So I think it's really just the understanding that there has been so much baseball. And I think that's part of what sets it apart. I think that may have been in my story in the college newspaper, was the fact that baseball has so much more history than any other sport.
You know, I love it when you tweet about your exchanges with your mom, with your dad. I think last time you were here, you actually were on with your mom. That was one of the greatest shows we've ever done, just because of your mom was as awesome as, of course, she was. I think I told you even then that my mom and I had a very similar kind of relationship, where she told me once, you need to write a book and call it, I Never Saw That Before. So I've never written the book, but I've written, like, I write one every week. Right? So I do share that. And I love the Willie Mays exchange that you tweeted between you and your mom just the other day on Willie Mays' 92nd birthday. I would love it if you just share that with people, because they would get a kick out of it.
Absolutely. So it was Willie Mays' birthday on Saturday, and I literally went to my phone and searched the word Mays, and I was like, we have to have some really good text back and forth about Willie Mays over the years, and we had a ton. I wish that Apple gave you like a number of search terms that were returned. It doesn't, but I was scrolling. But I found this text conversation we had had last February during Black History Month, where I had sent my mother a tweet from MLB or MLB stats with all of Willie Mays' accomplishments. And I sent that to her, and she said, she said, he's the greatest. No way, you're the greatest. He's number two. And then I said, no, he can be number three. But that's just the way we interact and the way we interact about baseball. And I also tweeted and said that I wouldn't be here right now talking to you guys, doing any of this, if not for Willie Mays. I mean, Willie Mays was my mother's hero and idol growing up. She always talks about how her younger sister was into the Beatles, and my mother was into Willie Mays. So there was something in the newspaper about the Beatles, it went to Kira, her sister. And if there was something about Willie Mays, it went to my mother. And that was just the thing that they were obsessed with and they would keep up with in any way they could. And if not for that, I don't end up the baseball fan I am. If not for my mother being such a huge Giants fan, and my grandfather, and just her being able to follow Willie Mays' career. So I'm so grateful for all of those threads that baseball gives us.
That's great. You'd be tweeting the fun Paul McCartney facts otherwise, right?
Exactly.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, and you mentioned just the through line of baseball and that continuity. You know, I'm wondering how their coverage, their research has shifted along with the changes in the rules of the game. You know, the game, you know, still has its core, but it's been a pretty revolutionary year. And, you know, how has that impacted you and sort of how you've seen the game and how you cover the game?
I mean, the biggest thing is just the time of game. And I remember on opening day, we had 15 games. We finally had every team play on opening day for the first time since it was in 1968. And every game was over by 12:55 Eastern, something like that. And I mean, certainly for anyone involved in the media, there was a positive to them getting home earlier, just a little bit less of dragging or time or whatever you may say. But for me, it's also been paying a little more attention every moment. You know, I sit here and I watch every game. And if I'm, you know, focused on the Red Sox-Phillies game, all of a sudden the Blue Jays and the Pirates are in the fifth inning and I don't know how it became 1-0. So really kind of changing my pacing along with the game. But it has certainly revolutionized in-season bedtimes, which is pretty fascinating to see. And I mean, the other rules have been really interesting to see as well. But I would say that with everything, you're not super aware of it. And I think that that was my biggest takeaway, even in spring training games and then on opening day. And now here we are, more than a month into the season, you're aware of the effects of the rules, but I don't find myself aware of the rules and their implementation during the game. And I think that tells you it's working. You're not super aware of the pitch timer unless there's a violation. Same with the disengagement, unless there's a violation. And I think that's kind of the ideal.
No doubt. You now have a fun piece that you write every week for MLB.com, which I look forward to so much, the coolest stats of the week. Let's chat about some of that stuff that you delve into that Doug and I and everyone who reads and follows you love so much. And I feel like this is one of those years where we have to start with the Rays. Sarah, the Rays are 28-7. What should everyone know about the Rays?
Oh my goodness. I mean, my favorite thing about the Rays is that they have led to my tweeting and talking about so many teams from the 1800s. And that's how you know they're doing something right. I believe the Rays Twitter account tweeted back at me one day, like a couple weeks ago, and said, "Take that, Maroons," because, of course, the longest season opening win streak in MLB history, we go prior to 1900, belongs to the 1884 St. Louis Maroons. And my college, I will say, University of Chicago, we were the Maroons, so I've enjoyed tweeting about Maroons. But just overall, I mean, I think one of the most impressive things to me was they went 18-2 in their first 20 home games. That was the best record in the team's first 20 home games since 1900. And when everything they're doing has to be cut off at 1900, otherwise we get the White Stockings and the Wolverines and the Maroons. Again, that tells you that they're doing something right. They also started 22-0 when scoring first before they finally lost that game to the Yankees on Saturday. That was tied with our friends, the Maroons, in 1884. For the longest win streak when scoring first to start a season. So it's amazing because it's all been so predicated on these streaks. And everybody who said, oh, they've only played the Nationals, they've only played whoever, it's May 8th and they're still really good. So I think those people need to quiet down about that at this point.
Is it maroons as in the color, or maroon like marooned on an island, or what do we?
I assume the color, but now I want it to be the other.
There's an island out in the Mississippi that they played on. Is that what you're saying? Okay, I'm pretty sure that wasn't the deal. But I want to say something about the Maroons. Okay, have you looked into the Maroons story? Everybody's complaining, as you said, about the Rays and their schedule. Check out the St. Louis Maroons. Doug, they basically invented their own league. Seriously, they formed a league, and they were poaching players from all the best players from all the other teams, and they formed this super team against this league that nobody was as good as them because they stole all the good players. So I don't want to hear about it. Okay.
It could be so that sounds like the Maroon Island type of thing. They just made their own island, apparently.
All right, one more thing. If they win again tonight, the Rays, they'd be 29-7. So every team since 1900 that has started 29-7 has won the World Series, except for one, the 1902 Ooh. Pirates. Sarah, why didn't the 1902 Pirates win the World Series?
They didn't get a chance to. There was no World Series yet. Right. See, this is why people noticed, we said, since 1900 or expansion or divisional or what have you. A very common one that we should probably use more with what the Rays are doing is World Series era. So the first World Series was in 1903, and I remember coming across the Pirates on one of my lists a couple of days ago and thinking, oh, poor Pirates, they didn't even get the chance.
Exactly. I thought you were going to say the pitch clock. I thought it was because of the pitch clock in 02 or something.
Yeah, they didn't need no stinking pitch clock in 1902, pal. All right, hey, all right, how about Shohei Ohtani? He is the gift that keeps on giving for people like you and me and Doug. You know Doug's word for him, right? Otonic? It's the greatest.
Yeah, that's it. You can use. There's no other adjective. Otonic. Yeah.
All right, so, Sarah, what should people know about Shohei Ohtani?
I mean, there's so much to know, but what I'm very excited for is with two more strikeouts, he will have more career strikeouts as a pitcher than Babe Ruth. And then maybe people will finally process that this is on another planet compared to what Babe Ruth did. And no disrespect to Babe Ruth, but in his last outing, Ohtani had 13 strikeouts. That 13th was the 500th of his career, making him one of two players in MLB history with at least 500 strikeouts as a pitcher and at least 100 home runs as a batter, the other being Babe Ruth. Now, he has a while to go before 714 home runs. But I think we need to process that the pitching, especially, is just on a complete other level. And again, no one was throwing 100 miles an hour when Babe Ruth was there, which also means he didn't have to face 100 miles an hour. But Shohei Ohtani routinely does what I call an Ohtani special, which is when he pitches in a game, if you go to the game feed on Baseball Savant, he's up there with the most swings and misses, the fastest pitches thrown, one of the highest exit velocities, and one of the highest distances. It's just incredible to see what he's doing and incredible to measure it as well.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
It is. Now, I mean, you and I have gone back and forth on this a lot, but my favorite thing is just kind of a variation of what you just talked about, and that is comparing Ohtani the hitter to all the poor people who have to hit against him, right? He's hitting 295. His batting average this year is 295. The league, he's faced 153 hitters. They have 16 hits. The league is hitting 125 against him. So I was messing around with this a little bit last week. And I thought, what would have to happen for the hitters who are facing him to get their average as high as his average? So he would have to give up a hit to the next 29 hitters he faces in a row. What do you think the odds of that happening are?
I mean, I'll never say zero, but let's say 0.1. I mean, that is not happening. And Sleeper is the best pitcher in baseball. I mean, he's just on another level, this pitcher. And it's really a development that we've seen over the last year and a half. If you remember, he had that game at Yankee Stadium, very much hyped. Back in 2021, he gave up like 7 runs in the first inning. After that, he stopped walking guys. And for the rest of the year, he had this pinpoint control. And that's really where I trace the development of who he is as a pitcher at the major league level and showing that he can adapt at the major league level. And I mean, last year, I believe he rolled out 2 new pitchers we never seen before. I mean, he is literally just playing with the hitters. It is amazing to see.
Sarah, repeat after us. He's Otonic, right?
He's Otonic.
Well, you know, I think you could come up, instead of like the odds, you could use the term or the number -0. Otani deserves his own number.
Like
so I'm going to give him his own number, -0. But I'm curious, like, you know, MVP votes, we talk about this a lot, MVP Cy Young. I mean, do you think he needs like another category? Is it fair that he's even in the pool of just value? Like, how do you even compare him to what the standard
is? I mean, it's really impossible because when he has a year like his 2021 and like the year he's having this year and last year, it's just not fair. I mean, people used to say, well, how many innings has Judge thrown? And that's not the point. It's not fair for that to be the standard. But as long as he continues to do both things at a really good level, as he has, he is always going to be in that conversation. Just attempting is not enough. We've seen guys try to be two-way players, not work out. But he's doing it, and he's doing it so, so well. It's just impossible to ignore, and it's almost like he deserves his little Otani award every year, even separately, the Otonic, maybe. Like an Oscar or something, but of course he'll get his big contract and that'll be the award, I guess.
Well, does he have like a mix? It sounds like a mixed drink though. Yeah. The Otonic. Is there something? I mean, you know, we gotta work on this stuff here. Start selling things.
Vodka and Otonic. If that ever catches on, I know about 600 players that would be trying to.
Absolutely.
All right. Last time you were here, we did something that people loved. Let's do it again. It's our trips down the research rabbit hole where, all right, Sarah and I, we have this inquisitive streak where something happens in baseball. And like as your mother said at the dinner table, you start saying to yourself, I wonder the last time that happened. That sounds like a nice, innocent question, doesn't it, Doug? Let me tell you how many hours of my life just that question has caught me, because you ask it and then you have to know. But finding out is hard and time consuming. Like, I'm very grateful for the invention of Baseball Reference. I'm very grateful. Okay. Life changing. It's awesome. Okay. But because Baseball Reference and the StatHead tool exist, it's now when you ask that question, when's the last time that happened? And you have to know, it's possible to know. So here was one of those moments that happened to me last week. Okay, the Padres and Giants play in Mexico City. The game is 16-11. There's 11 homers, there's 1,000 hits, 150 guys go to home plate. The winning pitcher in this game was a guy named Tom Cosgrove for the Padres, first game of his career. He faced one hitter. He threw 4 pitches. He got a ground ball to second base. He got the win in a game that was the longest game of the year. So I thought to myself, I wonder if there is a pitcher who faced a batter, got a win in a game like that, where there were that many runs scored or more runs scored than that. Okay, that sounds like a fun question to look into, right? There's only one way to do it, and that is to look up every single pitcher who faced one batter and got a win. Okay, so it kind of took a while because I had to go back almost 90 years. And so I'm just going through the games, going through this guy, that guy, that guy. Oh, there's 25 runs, there's 24 runs. I finally found one. Okay, it was a guy named Belve Bean.
Belve.
You know Belve,
yeah.
Right? For the Indians. It was in a 15-14 game in 1934. Belve Bean cost me probably 25 minutes of my life that I could have spent doing something meaningful. Instead, I did that. What's wrong with me, Sarah?
This makes all of the sense in the world to me. As I said last time, I mean, these are just things that happen. You know, mine recently was last week, I believe, maybe the week before. The Mets and the Nationals are playing a game, ends up back and forth. C.J. Abrams, youngster on the Nationals, hits a go-ahead grand slam. The Nationals end up losing the game, but he hits the grand slam. He's 22 years old. And I wonder if he's the youngest guy with a grand slam for the Nationals since even Soto, right? I mean, this is a franchise that has had some really, really good young players over the last handful of years. Ryan Zimmerman, Bryce Harper, Juan Soto. So I'm just curious whether he is the youngest since. Now, as you said, these tools we have are great. They allow us to search a lot of things. They don't allow us to just key in grand slam. You have to search guys with the home run, at least four RBI, and then you have to make sure that they actually hit a grand slam. You go through his box score. So I finally find that he was the youngest at 22 years and 206 days old. He was the youngest Nationals player with a grand slam since Ryan Zimmerman on April 22nd, 2007, at the exact same age, which is incredible, to the day. 22 years and 206 days old. So I think, okay, that's cool. I really thought it would be Harper Soto. This is even better. I'm sitting there, and I don't want to just know youngest since. I am curious, are they the youngest overall?
So of course you were.
I'm staring at my results for Nationals and Expos history of guys that young with a home run and four RBIs. So then I go through a bunch more box scores and learn that he is not just the youngest since, that they are tied for the youngest players in Nationals and Expos history.
And Expos.
At the exact same age. I mean, it's just incredible. And it also means their birthdays are very close because both of these were in late April.
All right, let me ask you something. You found last since. You could have stopped. You didn't stop. I've been there so many times. I've already devoted 15 minutes to this, and now I found a note. Why do I keep going? What is wrong with me? Okay, so do you ever ask yourself, why did I keep going? What is it about having to know? What is it about baseball? What is it about my brain that keeps me going? I need to know these things.
I do think it's that inquisitiveness that really comes with baseball. I mean, it's totally different. But Mookie Betts was mic'd up on Sunday Night Baseball last night. And he asked Carl and Coney and Eduardo if they had the exit velocity on Machado's burgeoning double. He was curious because Machado came up During the inning, Wall Betts was mic'd up, and he goes, "He really hit that one. Do you guys have the Statcast on?" I mean, there was just this curiosity. And for me, when I see youngest since, it looks unfinished. I know it doesn't look that way to everybody else except probably you guys. But I see youngest since, and I'm like, cool. But that's only half of it. I need to know the rest of it.
All right, Doug, now you can answer the question. What is wrong with us?
Oh, it's a baseball brain, you know. Is there like a movie about that? I'd love to see like a baseball brain movie. But yeah, it's just, it's the rabbit hole. And it's a pleasurable place to kind of continue to go and try to figure out, you know, because I know we love history and it connects the dots and all of us have tremendous memories, right? My brother taught me the game. My dad was from Trinidad and Tobago, where they played cricket. And my mom was really the kind of first parental baseball fan that when I was playing for the Phillies, she knew more about what was happening in the league than I did at some point. She was like, "Yeah, you hear Bernie Williams might get traded? Like, what? What are you talking about?" So I was associate, like, that search brings me back to my family in a lot of ways. You know, it's, you know, brotherhood, sisterhood. My granddad, when he passed away 12 hours before I got traded to the Phillies from the Cubs, which was actually upsetting, not just my grandfather passing, obviously, but the trade and going, even though I was going to my hometown team or the team I loved growing up, I was hurt by the Cubs, like, getting rid of me. Right. But the thing that also struck me was my granddad used to always say to me, "You still hitting that ball? You still hitting that ball?" He'd ask me that every time. And it just became a thing to explain to him. And it was pretty remarkable that I could say to him, you know, my baseball, you know, outlived my grandfather. You know, I could actually say at his wake, at his service, like, "Still hitting that ball." You know, so I think a lot of times when I'm searching, it goes through my childhood. It flows back through history. My son's middle name is Robinson after Jackie Robinson. I don't know, that's my connection, but you know, the numbers are stories, and I think we all just love it.
Nice. I'm gonna bring that up every once in a while, Doug, and ask you still hitting that ball?
You still hitting that ball?
I said,
no, not anymore.
It's great. Sarah, you inspire us. You amaze us. You have so much you're dealing with now in your life, and yet you keep spreading the love of baseball and the love of life. But, you know, we kind of touched on the Beatles. You know that old Beatles line, "The love you take is equal to the love you make"? That's you. You know, you put that love out into the universe, and it comes right back to you. You have so many people following you now, showering you with that love. I wonder if you can describe what that's been like and what it means to you, that you're just being you and yet people are responding the way they are.
It's very hard to describe. I mean, I have been in some form of overwhelmed basically for the last however many months this has been. Since I shared this, and even before that, when I had shared with people close to me and began to sort of explain this story to people. But, I mean, it's incredible. I really don't have the words, but again, I always return to the fact of I'm so, so grateful and so blown away, but we need to appreciate people before something like this happens. And I'm not saying go back in time and appreciate me. I was plenty appreciated. I'm very grateful. But think about the people in your life. This is to everybody listening, who help you on a daily basis, make you happier, whatever it may be. Make sure that you're explaining to them how important that is, because you know, you want to be able to share that with them when they can still appreciate it, overwhelm them the way I am overwhelmed. I mean, that is the best possible scenario. So I am so, so grateful. And as I have said, I mean, I never thought out for baseball to love me back, but I certainly do feel that way. And for someone who grew up rooting for a team that did not seem to love her back in the day, I believe in camp one year I wrote a poem where I said something about loving baseball and it not loving me back because my team's never won. I mean, first of all, it goes far beyond that. I don't root anymore, but I learned that actually baseball can love you back.
Yeah. Who's the most surprising person that you've heard from since October? It could be either through the Baseball is the Best t-shirt campaign, even just last week with Fist Bump for ALS, or just in any setting.
I mean, I got the chance to meet Julio Rodriguez at the Baseball Writers Center. He came up to me and he's thanked me for the positivity I share and everything. I didn't know he knew who I was or what I do. So that was a really, really emotional moment for me. And by the way, I said the same back to him. I mean, we need more and more people approaching the game from within the game the way he does. But there was a similar moment with Justin Turner at the World Series when he was getting the Roberto Clemente Award before Game 3. And he came up to me and said something very similar. And said something very similar. And again, I just can't process that these people know who I am. So,
Doug, let's try to process this. Well, I mean, you're a worldly, professorial kind of guy. What do you think it is about baseball, the community of baseball, that when someone like Sarah, is going through what she's going through, that people rally around her the way they do? There's something different about it, and I don't know how to explain it, but it really is a baseball thing and about the way baseball cares about its own.
Yeah, man. I mean, my class just ended, so I'm doing my final grades at UConn, and it was just another semester of reminded of going through all these sports and talking about sports in society that I still just land on baseball. And I think, you know, it is a sport that has this feeling of family. And I know I mentioned my associations with it, but you also, you know, don't have to be related, so to speak, right? You can come together from all these worlds and unify and unite around this daily cause. You know, this is something that's in your living room every day. And that's what's different about baseball in and of itself. It's not once a week, it's not 3 days a week, it's every day. You're telling the stories of these families. And, you know, I always think of spring training where every single year, and this is my favorite part of the game, diverse groups of people from all over the world, all kinds of skill sets, descend on spring training and try to figure out how to become a family, how to become a team. And eventually it's an intuition on how to do this, how to build. And you may win 90 games, you may win 70, but there's something about what takes place in that transformation that really reflects what baseball is about. And you don't have to speak the same language. You don't have to speak, you know, you just have an understanding and a respect. And I think the people that seem to love the game have an inordinate amount of patience because it's a game. It's a game of crescendos and moments and tensions. And, you know, I, as a parent, I relate to that so well every day of just trying to, all right, I got my 7-year-olds trying to learn how to play soccer, you know, just everything. You have to take your time and give people space and grow. And I think it's just 10 times more powerful when someone like Sarah, who is so unconditional in her passion and love for the sport and love for that family, you know, it's the ultimate loyalty to, and you know what it feels like as a family member when someone has that kind of dedication to you as a family member, where there's no questions asked, that unconditional love. it makes you better. And I think the game is better because of Sarah. And I think I'm so glad and proud that the game knew that they have to appreciate that. Mm.
What do you think, Sarah? Is Doug onto something?
I do think so. And thank you for those words. I mean, I do think that the idea of family and the idea that teams are family and that people involved in the game are family is really, really important. I mean, I've referred to my baseball family so many times since sharing this diagnosis and previously. I mean, that's sort of how I referred to the people I've worked with at ESPN, which is the two of you, and the people I work with in MLB, and the people I know in so many different, you know, nooks and crannies of this game. To me, it's just the baseball family, the people who I care about and care about me, because we have this shared passion, and that is how we met, and that is how we stay in touch. But there's so much beyond it. So I do think that it's almost like each individual team is a microcosm of that, that you have those families in so many different facets of the game, and you have that with fandom. I mean, we see how much fans rally together, how much they have that shared experience as well.
Well, Sarah, we're so grateful that you're part of our family and that we're part of your family. And it's been so cool to have you visit us in Starkville, share your story, share your passion for baseball with us. So thank you for that. But hey, we've also asked you to be part of a little surprise we have in store in this show. So is it okay if you stick around for just a few more minutes?
Absolutely.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Okay, it's that time again. It's time for listener trivia, our way of involving you, our favorite listeners in this show. But Doug, this week, we're going to do something a little different and way more fun. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to have Sarah Langs hit us with trivia, because when you have Sarah just hanging out in Starkville and then you have a trivia segment coming up in your show, Doug, you cannot let Sarah Langs leave. Okay. So nope. We're going to hand the trivia reins over to Sarah. And Sarah, no pressure here, but until a couple weeks ago, I'm sure you know, Doug and I had ripped off 6 correct questions in a row. We had the second biggest streak in baseball, which it was just the Rays and us. Okay, so are you ready?
I'm ready.
Doug, right. Are you ready? Are you up to the challenge of a Sarah Langs trivia question?
Yes, yes. I'm already thinking about what statue to build in Starkville. in honor of this moment. But yeah, there's a lot of statues, so I need maybe a library or something. But I'm working on it.
A little behind on the actual statue construction. We can talk about that after the show. All right, Sarah, let's hear your question.
All right, my question is, there are five players, so you guys can combine to pick three, who homered at age 20 or younger and 40 or older for the same team. Who are they?
Whoa.
Now we need three out of five players who homered at 20 or younger and somewhere in their 40s for the same team. Okay. Let's get to work here.
No, quick question. Is it like Expos and Nationals? Is that the same team?
Oh, franchise. You know, kind of franchise, thing? Correct?
Yeah, franchise.
Or is that a clue?
Franchise. Okay. Good try, Doug. All right. Okay, so we need to think about players who got to the big leagues really young, and then they either had to stay with that team their whole career or return to that team late in their career, right? So, first name that came to mind for me was Ken Griffey Jr. He came back to his team, the Mariners. He feels like he should be right. I thought about Albert Pujols. I can't remember if Albert debuted at 20 or 21, Doug, so keep him in mind. Al Kaline, he's almost got to be another one, right? He came up at 20, played into his 40s, never left the Tigers. I'd be shocked if he's not one. So if it's Griffey and Kaline, then we only need one more, right? So let's think this through. I tried to do this by thinking about guys who came up young, but that's hard. Robin Yount, I mean, he definitely played in the big leagues at 20. I'm not sure he was still playing at 40, but he played a long time. So that's one. I know that, you know, if you go back in the early 1900s, Mel Ott is on all the lists. Anytime you research who did this before 20, anytime Sarah's putting up her Juan Soto list, Mel Ott's all over it, right? So the question is, did he play into his 40s and did he homer for the Giants in his 40s? So put him down as a maybe. I thought about Ted Williams. How young was Ted Williams when he debuted? Was he 20? I honestly can't remember. I wrote down Henry Aaron, Carl Yastrzemski, Stan Musial, Willie Mays. I mean, they all played into their 40s, played a long time. Did they start at 20 or younger? You know, I have so much useless stuff rattling around my brain, Doug. Why isn't that up there? That's what I need to know. Okay. All right, so I gave you a bunch of names. Yeah. Who would be on your list?
Yeah, I mean, I have some of the same. I mean, I thought about Aaron. I mean, was he up at 20, though? You know, did he play to 40, Aaron? Hey, I think, you know,
all the baseball reference searches that I've run, and he shows up on all of them, but did he show up on that one? I can't remember.
No, Pujols is tough. He came up in what, 2000?
2001. And was one? He 21 or 20? I think he might have been 21.
Because he retired at...
42. So if he 21 to 42 at 2022, that means he didn't homer at 20 unless his birthday was in the middle of the season.
Oh,
right?
I don't know. Stan Musial, you said played. I mean, he's a Cardinal forever, obviously.
Played many years, but, right? Henry Aaron played many years.
Yeah, so the odds are
with us on those guys.
All right, now Nelson Cruz is a question. When did he start? Has he played 20 years yet?
No.
He didn't come up that early, right?
Right, he didn't start at
20. He's 42.
He's a late bloomer.
He didn't start. Okay, crossing him off. Billy, what about the Cubs? Like Billy Williams, Ernie Banks, like didn't they play forever? And the Cubbies?
Yeah.
All right. Barry Larkin, Chipper Jones, Dale Murphy. I'm just going through whoever.
Chipper got there young. I don't think he played long.
No, I don't think it was. No, I played against him. I should know this. 91. And he was drafted out of high school in 1990. I don't think he got to the big leagues at 20, though.
He made a brief cameo. But then,
did he?
Because of the strike, they sent him back, right? So, anyway, Sarah, you know what I used to do to Mike and Mike? This is what these questions now do to us. we thrash around a lot.
Darrell Evans? What about Darrell Evans? Someone like Darrell Evans? He was a big dude, tight, you know. Okay, all right, all right. So we have, all right, Junior, he went back to the Mariners, right?
Yeah, he finished with the Mariners. So I think Griffey and Kaline seem like they've got to be right.
You like Kaline?
I do.
So, we're not sure. So Pujols, Yount, Ott, Ted Williams. Because remember we got this crazy trivia question that Ted Williams, well, first of all, did he only play for one team? Let's just make sure I got that right. Okay, so he stole a base in four different decades.
Did he?
We know that. Yes. He stole a base in four different decades. So that means he was up 30, 40, 50, for four 60, different
that's
decades.
That's right. Another question. So, he probably
hit a home run. Because that's like, I don't know, that's a lot of years, right? 23, right. Whatever.
Did he start at 20? That's all we need to know.
I mean, that's an educated
guess. It always sounds good to guess Ted Williams. It does.
Yeah, because we didn't guess Rickey Henderson last time. That was terrible. Robin Yount, I don't know. I mean, he was 19, right? But did he make it to 40?
I don't know. Maybe not. All right, let's try to figure this out, okay? All right, one more question. Yeah. Okay. This is another Glanville thing, Sarah. I'm sure we've thrown out at least three names that are right, but guessing the right three names, that's hard. Doug thinks we should be able to guess five and hope we get three of them right. But we've argued about whether that's cheating. What do you think?
I will be gregarious and let you do it. But there's some kind of asterisk.
We don't care about asterisks.
There we go.
We don't acknowledge your sticking asterisks, okay?
We're PEDing the question.
Yeah, all right. So we're going to guess Kaline, Griffey.
That's still messing me up.
What else?
Ted Williams.
Aaron.
Aaron. All right.
Musial. We throw an odd in there? Yeah, what are we doing? There's got to be three right answers in there somewhere.
Musial? Mays. Now, Mays didn't. He was like
Doug,
Giants.
And, we need to guess. Okay. What do we guess?
How has Willie Mays played for like 300 years?
Did he debut at 20? That's the only question. With all these guys, we need to guess. Can you help me with that?
All right, what are we,
Kaline Griffey,
Griffey, Ted Williams.
Aaron Williams. Is that what we're doing?
Aaron Williams.
We said somebody. Yeah.
We said Musial.
I don't know. He played a long
Griffey,
time.
Griffey, Kaline, Ted Williams, Hank Aaron. I don't know the last one. What do you say? Musial? Well, I mean, Stan is the answer.
Williams,
to
Musial,
right?
Aaron. I think that,
yeah.
Or
why not?
You want to do that?
Yeah. Ohtani? Is Ohtani an answer? He should be.
Well, that was my follow-up, is who is going to do this in the future. But we'll get that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so... I'm not sure exactly how many names we just guessed, but is there any chance there are three right answers in there, Sarah?
There are, but I want to deduct points for the two you guys were most certain of being wrong.
That we skipped?
Al Kaline and Ken Griffey Jr. are wrong.
And
those were the ones you were most certain of. And by the way...
That's my fault.
Those are his answers.
Yeah, I just knew that they started early and played a long time. So
behind the scenes moment is that I looked this up like 2 years ago. I don't know why, but I knew it would be a perfect one for this. I triple checked it when I ran it. But when Jason Shark is guessing Ken Griffey Jr. and Al Kaline, I'm sitting here like, did I screw it up? Am I wrong? So I double checked. So Griffey did play into his 40s, but his oldest home run was at 39 years and 316 days old. And Kaline didn't even play at 40. He retired 39-287. So the ones you guys put is almost.
Wow. Going. See, I saw Al Kaline in uniform at 80, and he looked like he could still play.
Well, he debuted so young, right? The 20 qualifier isn't even needed for him. He homered at 18, so he got too much time on that end, not enough on the other.
Yeah,
But I'll tell you other two names. So you guys got Ted Williams, Sam Musial, and Henry Aaron. The other two were Willie Mays. That was indeed correct. And the one that I figured you wouldn't get, George Brett.
Really?
Oh, I have him on my list. I have him on here, too.
Thought about him. Wow. Like, yeah. All right, so we got this right with an asterisk, though, right?
All right.
And we don't acknowledge any asterisks, so let's celebrate.
Celebrate.
You know, we're always excited to get these questions right, Sarah. We just got a Sarah Lyons question right. Doug, what does that rank on our list of career achievements?
Well, I've come up with the numbers negative zero today. I'm going to stick with that. This negative zero. It's so low that it's incredible.
It is pretty euphoric.
I do have a pretty fun one. So when I ran this in Excel 2 years ago, something else I noticed was that there were four guys who did this for teams in the same city or area. So they didn't do it for the Red Sox, the Braves, so on and so forth. But I'll just tell you them. I just thought it was really cool. So we have Rogers, Hornsby for the Cardinals, and then the Browns.
Cubs.
St. Louis. Hornsby. Babe Ruth for the Red Sox, and then the Boston Braves.
The Braves.
Elmer Vallo for the Philadelphia Athletics, and then the Phillies. And then Ron Fairley for the Angels, and then the Dodgers.
Ron.
Wow,
Ron Fairley. That's a great.
That is fantastic. You know, this has been the best trivia segment we've ever had. I got big news. It's about to get even better. we're about to bring in the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, to play another one of his legendary play-by-play clips involving this week's answer. So, Tim, what do you got for us this week? You got some good options, man.
Yeah, seriously. We're going to put a giant asterisk on the welcome to Starkville sign, by the way, guys. Just a giant asterisk. And a little
don't acknowledge
plaque
your
that says Sarah Lang's trivia question. I was going back in, you know, all these great home runs, but what was the greatest home run hit by one of these players when they were 40?
Yeah, that's Ted Williams' final home run.
That was
Ted Williams' final home run. It just doesn't get any better than that, does it?
It does. I think it gets
the Henry Aaron.
Because number 715, well, he hit 755, obviously. Number 715, he was 40. In April that year, he turned 40. Let's in February. We're going to go with the less listened to version of the call.
Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron.
Whew, that's goosebumps on every level for the moment and the Vin Scully call. Do you know when Vin's final season, I did a big oral history of Vin Scully, and one of the people I talked to was Bob Costas for 2.5 hours. And in the midst of that, he did Vin's call pretty much of the entire inning from memory.
Wow.
Because, of course. Anyway, that was great. Wow. Great. And Sarah, that was special. It was special because you're special. So, listen, thank you so much for joining us for the trivia and for just being you. We appreciate you. We're thrilled to be part of your family, and we can't wait until you come back here and join us again.
Thank you guys so much. I wish you an amazing day getting to chat with both of you.
We feel the same way. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. Great seeing you.
Strange but true.
Doug, the part of the show that America waits so anxiously for has finally arrived. It's time for our favorite wacky segment of every week, The Strange But True. And this week, we have a couple things we wanted to have some fun with. We already kind of touched on one of them earlier with Sarah Lyons. That was the nutty game in Mexico City last week. Padres 16, Giants 11. Here's a question for you, Doug. This is not trivia. Mm-hmm. How many home runs were hit that day? Muchos. Muchos. Yes,
that's good. See, that's a good number.
And let's tell you what. You know it would be kind of fun? Let's hear it.
Crawford drives one down the right field line toward the corner. It is a home run to right field and deep, and that ball is gone. Back on the ball is Soto. It is gone, Mitch Haniger. Stremski going back, looking up, and that's gone.
Oh, there's more to come, folks. Stay tuned.
Back by the wall, it's gone. The Padres have gone back-to-back in the fourth. This ball's flying in Mexico City. And that ball is gone. Padres go back-to-back. Second time in the game. It is gone. Blake Sabol's tied the game. That's another Giants home run. It's 11-10. Back goes Conforto. That ball is gone. It's a two-run shot. Puts the Padres back on top. Manny's second-round tripper of the ball game.
That ball is gone, Doug. And also, and that ball is gone.
It was like, right. And I saw Bob Melvin this weekend, and he said any ball that was hit in the air, we were like, uh-oh, yeah, right? it's gone. You know, it's just any ball was a shot to get out of there.
Yeah, you know, I wrote all about this game in my Weird and Wild column the other day. It was so much fun. And, you know, I was talking to Jesse Agler, who's the Padres radio voice, friend of the podcast. He's been on here with us. And, you know, I mentioned to him, baseball is part of its globalization campaign. They're taking retired players around the world and staging these little 3-on-3 home run derbies to show off the game. They took their very own real-time home run derby to Mexico City. Or Mexico City brought the home run derby to them. I'm not sure what happened, but there was a lot of just amazing, hysterical stuff that came out of this. Let me just give you a couple of my favorites. First is, do you know, we almost had a mile's worth of home runs in this game. We've never had a major league game in which a mile's worth of home runs were hit, 5,280 feet. But this game came really close. I counted them up, 4,858 feet worth of homers, according to the StatCast projections. So they only missed by 422 feet. So I had to know. And so I went to Jason Bernard, who's the keeper of all things StatCasty, and said, where does this rank on the most feet worth of homers, closest to a mile's worth of homers rankings? And it was third. Okay, there was the famous Diamondbacks-Phillies game in Philly in 2019, 13 homers. Talked about that on this pod. 4,969 feet that day. And then later that year, the Diamondbacks played another one, in which 4,861 feet worth of homers were hit. That's a lot of feet. But I don't know what to make of this because, all right, the 49-69 game, that was 13 homers. So that was two more homers than this. The other game was 12 homers. That's one more homer than this. I don't know. Is there a metric mile in there somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You think so?
Well, I'm thinking right off the top of my head that the altitude of Mexico City is 7,349 feet, and which is a lot more than a mile. So it lends itself to be a test to see if Major League Baseball is willing to expand to the moon. Yeah. And I say that, because if you can play in zero gravity or close to zero gravity, Mexico City is a good place to test it out. And I've already thought about expansion teams. And since it's the Sea of Tranquility, we have to come up with a nickname. So we just do like a poll of all the fans. What would you nickname a team that is based at the Sea of Tranquility? What's that? Story? The regolith? Isn't it the regolith? Isn't that the rock of the moon, the moon rocks? So Sea of Tranquility, regoliths. They could debut in 2037. That would be
they'd lead the league of homers, right? That's
absolutely. It would be highly problematic to pitch for them. But if you pay enough money, someone might actually do it.
They'd have some long trips, by the way.
Yeah, you know,
jet lag would be rough.
It would be tough, but you play 3 months there, and then you all come back to Earth, and you play three more months. And once you decompress and you know, you shrink because you shrink a little bit in space. So yeah. There's all kind of medical issues, but I trust science. We'll figure it out.
Pretty good. Yeah. I was good. Like, I could even dispense with the rest of the notes from that game. But just so you know, between the third and the fifth innings, there was a stretch where there were 15 runs and 16 outs. So take that sea of tranquility. Huh? All right. One more we have to get in here. Okay. You know, I never have any idea when I'm writing all this stuff I write, who reads any of it or even who listens to this show. We don't know. But last week, we had something happen. The manager of an actual major league team revealed to the world that apparently he reads me. It might be an accident. I have no idea if he reads me on purpose, but that would be AJ Hinch of the Tigers. Now, here's how we know this. Last week, Doug, they swept a doubleheader from the Mets. And I'm just guessing that made him slightly delirious because afterward, he was asked about how it's possible that the Tigers could have this weird record where they're 2-14 against the AL East, but they were 10-3 against everyone else. And so here, courtesy of Cody Stavenhagen, is that the right pronunciation, who covers the Tigers for us? He recorded this. We're now going to get to hear the greatest answer of the season by any manager to any question. Let's go.
Hey, baseball. I mean, what does Jason Stark say? That's baseball. That's about the extent of what I think about it.
What does Jason Stark say? He really said that? Okay. So Cody tweeted that. And my phone started rattling like the San Andreas Fault, I'm telling you. And so this went on a while. Eventually, Ken Rosenthal egged me on to do something I don't think I've ever done. In my column, I quoted a manager quoting me. We call this segment The Strange But True. Does it get any stranger than that? What do you think?
Yeah, I always wonder what the etiquette is when you quote yourself. Is that like, I did it on a PowerPoint one time, and then I realized that's kind of weird, yeah. Right? I mean, so, you know.
This is better.
But I think we've arrived, and as I always offer people statues, we have to now think of what we can give, what kind of land we could give to AJ Hinch. I'm not sure yet. Or maybe like make a mini Detroit Tigers stadium in Starkville. So we always honor everybody that honors us and just who loves the game of baseball. So yeah. I'll think about that. Yeah.
All right, we have to get AJ to visit us here in Starkville some week and get to the bottom of this, don't you think? I think we do.
Yeah, that's just, it's become a mandate now. It's a mandate.
Right. All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. We'll be bringing you podcast magic just like this all season long on The Athletic Baseball Show, which is available in its entirety, absolutely free everywhere you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to read my Weird and Wild columns or any of the sensational baseball covers in The Athletic, we can tell you how. Even better, did you know we have Mother's Day coming up? We have Father's Day coming up. We have Graduation Day coming up. So maybe there's someone that you love, some mother, some father, some graduate that you would like to give a subscription to of The Athletic. You know how you can do that? Just go to theathletic.com/gift sale and you can give your mother, your father, or your favorite grad a 1-year subscription for just $19.99 for the whole year. The gifts just don't get any more special than that. But also remember, you too can be part of this podcast. Every show, we pick some fun listener trivia question, unless Sarah Langs is in town. And then that lucky listener gets to join us right here and prove once again, there's almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong. So how could you send us a question? Well, you can email us at starkville@theathletic.com, or you can do what most people do. You can hit us with these questions via the Twitter. Doug, the man with the blue check mark, can still be found on the Twitter. Where exactly, Doug?
I'm still there, and I'm wearing a blue shirt in honor of still having a blue check mark. So we'll go at Doug Glanville. Very, very simple. It's still there. Look for the check mark. DougGlanville.
I'm wearing a blue shirt in honor of Sarah Langs, which is way better. Okay. Yes, I'm at Jason St. JaysonST. Just hashtag those questions, Starkville QS. So Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Sarah Langs for visiting us and firing such a great trivia question at us. Thanks to the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, for producing us, for putting up with us, and for remembering that no asterisks actually count here in Starkville. And thanks to you all for listening. Doug and I will see you soon on Starkville.
Starkville.